This is Dana Monsees, the nutritionist and Whole30 certified coach behind Real Food with Dana, and you're listening to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. Hey guys, we are back for another episode of Real Talk with Dana. A couple of updates this week before we get started. You guys might notice that it sounds like that I am in a different place, and that's because I am in my new apartment, and it is awesome. After two moves, AC being broken, power not working, gas not working, internet not working, power going off so I couldn't install the internet, all of these things, I'm finally in my new place. But two things. It is super echoey in my home office, so I need to fix that before I can record high-quality podcasts for you guys in there. And when I was trying to record another episode for you guys for this week, figured out that somehow in the move, my mic broke. So I'm currently recording this from my phone. So by the next episode, I will have everything fixed up and sound quality will be great. But for this intro, it might sound a little bit sketchy. But anyways, so today's interview is with Magdalena Shalaki, and please forgive me if I am pronouncing that wrong because I am not great at pronouncing names, but we are talking all things hormone balance today. Magdalena is also known as the thyroid diet coach, so if you liked the episode with Dr. Becky Campbell, you're going to love this one too, because we're going to talk all about the different conventional treatments for hormone balancing versus the natural treatments. So what kinds of foods are great for hormone balancing, the different foods that are really great for different types of hormonal imbalances and stuff like that. And then last update, currently, while you guys are listening to this episode, if you're listening to it the day it comes out, I am in New York City, super nerding out, watching Harry Potter and the Cursed Child on Broadway, which I have had tickets for over 6 months for. So pretty stoked about that. And we'll do a recap post, or probably I'll tell you guys about it on the podcast. Gluten-free eats in New York. I also went to Expo East 2 weeks ago, and the recap post for all of the favorite products that you guys were asking me about, all the cool new brands I met, that will also be on the blog this week. So make sure you head over to realfoodwithdana.com to check out that, and I hope you enjoy the episode. So how about we get started with you introducing yourself and sharing a little bit of your personal story? So I know you used to work in advertising. So what brought you to the health and wellness space?
Real necessity, really. I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's disease in 2008 while living in Shanghai in China. And as much as, it was a big surprise to be diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. And for those listeners who might not be familiar with Hashimoto's, it's an autoimmune disease where the body starts attacking the thyroid and the thyroid starts underproducing the thyroid hormones. Effectively, that makes you feel exhausted all the time. You don't sleep well, you get constipated. I also started getting anxiety attacks, which was never the case in my life. So that was a huge surprise, the truth, Dana, is that I had health issues my whole life, and I just wasn't really listening to the symptoms much, much earlier on, starting from the fact that I was not a breastfed baby, so my immune system was always very weak. I had food sensitivities from a very young age. My mom told me that I used to be covered in eczema as a baby, and now I know this was all due to dairy sensitivities and gluten. And eggs, actually. Dairy and eggs were like my biggest enemy. And guess what? As a Western family, that's what we lived on, right? That's what you eat for breakfast. Constant ear infections. I don't remember much being a five-year-old child, but I do remember being taken to the hospital for ear drainage because I had so much pus in the ears. Later, not surprisingly, a lot of times food sensitivities manifest differently as we grow up. And because I didn't change my diet, that eczema stopped, but instead I developed adult acne, right? And, as a teenager, that was like, okay, well, that's normal. But then I had acne till, I was like 28 and I was covered in acne. And not just, you're talking about cystic acne, which your face looks like you've got little volcanoes on your face. And then
Right.
I had on my back and my front, you know, front of my chest, and then on my butt even. It was crazy. It was so embarrassing. It was horrible. And actually, it was the vanity that directed me in, you know, in towards food. I remember seeing this article that said that gluten might be the cause of adult acne. And I removed gluten and my skin cleared up, my PMSs got better, my migraines went away. So that's, you know, my late 20s, I already had discovered at some point that food can really help. I just didn't follow through, to be perfectly honest. You know, things really escalated. And so fast forward today, you know, I've been in practice for a decade now. And it's been certainly a journey, which, you know, I mean, today as a 45-year-old woman, I feel more energetic and I sleep better and I look better and my digestion is healthier than it has been since, you know, since I was 25. And I attribute, I would say probably 60% of the success to having revisited my diet, and the other 40% probably a combination of giving myself permission to sleep more, rest more, detox my life from any toxic substances in a house, you know, cleaners and skincare products, that kind of thing. You know, I'm not gonna say the food was everything, but it certainly was foundational to my healing.
Right, so food can definitely help a lot, but you can't stop there if you want to get to true health and healing.
Absolutely. You know, I always joke about it that you can sit and meditate and have a affirmation in a yoga practice, you know, and be all spiritual while eating crappy diets, like this ain't gonna help, you know, and
Right.
vice versa, right? Like if eating really healthy, but you are not sleeping enough and you're surrounded by toxic people, and a lot of really toxic emotions, including how we feel on the inside, you know, including shame or guilt, then that's going to be really hard to heal too. So you're right. I think it's just definitely it's a balance of all of those, especially when it comes to hormones.
Right. So if we go back and talk a little bit more about just autoimmune disease in general, for the listeners who don't know, like this, sometimes even if you have the genes that predispose you to autoimmune disease, it doesn't show up in everyone. So I know you mentioned you weren't breastfed, but there are a lot of other environmental factors that can come into the development of an autoimmune disease, including diet and lifestyle and everything like that. But usually there's also some kind of triggering, very stressful event that sets the autoimmune disease in motion. Do you know what yours was?
That's a good question. I don't think there was one event. It was a combination of a couple of things. One was, you know, being in a regional job. So when I was based in China, I was in a regional job. I was covering the region and I was constantly flying around every week, sometimes twice a week, I'll be in different countries and cities.
Oh, wow.
So being on the road, you know, airplane travel combined with eating food out of hotel rooms and airports is not particularly a definition of good health, right?
No.
So that was, yeah. So, and then the stress of the job, you know, I was the girl and a Sunday night you see on taking a flight to whatever you name it, Taiwan or Beijing, you know, working on my PowerPoint presentations for a Monday meeting, you know. So, you know, I worked on iconic brands, the Fortune 100 brands like L'Oreal and Nike and Johnson & Johnson. As much as it was super rewarding, it was also extremely stressful. So this is where, you know, probably that and a relationship that failed. So you're absolutely right. You know, one of the things I used to do when I worked with private clients, I don't anymore, but when I was in private practice for a number of years, one of the exercises that was very powerful, very insightful, that made a lot of people cry was the simple chart of just exercise of, you know, take a piece of paper, draw a line across the page, right, horizontally. And then on one side of the paper, start writing down some of the major events that happen in your life, right? So whether it's traumatic birth, whether it's, you know, a death of a parent, a car accident, you know, whatever happened, right? Getting, you know, kicked out of the house, losing a job, right? Losing a business. And write down roughly when it happened, like what year, if you remember the month. And then on the other side, start writing down one thing, because sometimes we get diagnosed like 2, 3 years later after the body starts screaming already, right? So what's really important is to start observing, like, when did I start feeling these big shifts in my health? And this is where it's incredibly eye-opening, this exercise. I call it a health history. Because what women realize, and this was my experience as well, I cried first time I did it, is that you start seeing a huge correlation between those two. You know, for example, like I had a lot, especially for some reason, you know, death of a person in a family, or caring for a person in a family, and how stressful it is. So let me give you an example of one of the women I worked with, who was caring for her mother, who was terminally ill, for a couple of years, and she ended up quitting her job and taking care of her. And you know, and it was within 6 months after the mom's passing that she was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, and soon after that, it turned out it was also lupus that she had, right? Both
Oh,
two serious
wow.
autoimmune diseases. You know, and so that this is a very common occurrence that happens. You know, one of the big key takeaways I want to share today with our audience is don't wait for a diagnosis. Your body is typically telling you much, much earlier when something is going wrong already, you know. And like, for example, this particular person I'm talking about who was taking care of her mom, you know, she had sleepless nights. She wasn't taking care of herself. You know, being a caregiver is an incredibly stressful and giving time. But we also need to have, you know, we need to create the space for replenishing and filling up our needs as well, right? Self-care, good diet, not living off coffee, not going to sleep with a glass of wine, you know, or three every night just to calm ourselves down, right? And that's how she was living. And so that's what I think, you know, really brought on that autoimmune disease. So yeah, you're absolutely right. A lot of, I see this over and over again, that traumatic events can bring on an autoimmune disease or completely throw your hormones out of control.
So I know you also mentioned before that you started to have a lot of anxiety as well, tied in with the autoimmune stuff. Is that common?
Yeah, so anxiety, I mean, anxiety is super. It's so prevalent, right, in our society. I mean, you just walk into CVS or Walgreens and look at how much medications there is related to, you know, for calming a mind, right? I wouldn't say it's specifically related to autoimmunity. I would relate it more to a hormonal imbalance. Everything from thyroid being out of whack, adrenals being out of control. Issues with estrogen, especially with estrogen dominance, can be causing anxiety. You know, people who have blood sugar problems, you know, blood sugar issues too high or too low can feel very anxious. People who are overly, you know, but also food sensitivities. You know, something that's really quite fascinating is how many people get off anti-anxiety medication when they change their diet and embark on an anti-inflammatory diet. So I wouldn't attribute it to just one thing. It can be a different host of reasons. Could be coffee, could be gluten. Dairy oftentimes creates anxiety. I used to work with a woman who was one of the top executives at Google, and when she came to me, it was a hard case because she was vegan, you know, by religious reasons. And so that's the hardest, right? Because you can't convince someone to change that part. So, you know, any form of so her protein was all coming in from dairy. At the same time, she has reached a point in her life where she had such horrendous mood swings and anxiety attacks and panic attacks and accusing her team, you know, of wrongdoing, that in her own review at work, she was just about to get fired from her job,
Oh
and her
no.
husband was about yeah, and her husband was a, and he just couldn't take it. And so we have modified her diet to remove dairy, at least temporarily, just to see if it helps. And believe it or not, her anxiety completely disappeared. Within 2 weeks, she was like a new person. Until today, I have the thank you card that she sent me saying that her marriage and her job got saved just from a diet change.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, so we started to mention what happens when your hormones are kind of getting out of control with the thyroid and the estrogen and everything. But so on kind of a macro, very high level, what happens with your body when your hormones get out of whack?
Yeah, that's a great and difficult question all at the same time, right? Because it kind of depends on which hormones are we talking about. So, and they all manifest a little different. Okay, well, since you ask on a higher level, I would say weight gain is one of the big ones, right? And that can be attributed to everything from low thyroid function, estrogen dominance. So estrogen dominance, for example, if you're carrying a lot of weight around your thighs and hips, or struggle with cellulite, even though you exercise and you eat a fairly clean diet, that can be due to estrogen dominance. Interesting. If you carry a lot of weight around your waist, that's oftentimes due to insulin problems, so blood sugar problems. A high testosterone in women is causing that apple, that proverbial apple shape of women, right? That could be that. And also problems with adrenals being high or low could also be interfering with our ability of losing weight. So weight gain is a huge one that can be due to so many different hormonal imbalances. Another one is fatigue, right? Which is, that's one of the, weight and I think fatigue are those two that are so frustrating for so many women, because we want that quick answer of saying, I should remove maybe these three foods and add these two foods and do this one supplement and then get all my energy back. Unfortunately, it doesn't often work that way, because it all depends what's causing that lack of fatigue, right? And fatigue can be also due to thyroid, it's infamous for that. Adrenal problems, estrogen, low, especially low estrogen can be causing that, right? And then if you go into specifically into some of the issues that a lot of women struggle with, so like low thyroid function, yes, weight gain, fatigue, but also things like losing your hair. Your hair becomes really dry and brittle. You start having constipation issues like never before. Anxiety attacks, depression, infertility. It's also largely due to low thyroid function, right? Dry skin. And a lot of times we start looking at topical things like, what's the next cream I should be using? What's the next shampoo I should change to? And it just doesn't work, because you're not addressing the root cause of a problem on the inside, right?
Right.
And topical. Another one, which we chatted before the show about adrenals. You mentioned a lot of women are struggling with the adrenals. So, something a lot of people don't realize, that having adrenal issues and the ability of burning fat is also largely due to adrenal issues, right? But also things like sleeping problems, feeling very anxious, crying for no reason, feeling lightheaded when you get off a sofa from a seated or lying position. You just get like, ooh, I'm gonna faint here, right? Like a blackout, are some of the causes. Another one that is, I'm really passionate about is estrogen dominance. Because, Dina, amongst all the hormonal imbalances, I feel like estrogen dominance is something that 80% of women at some point in their lives experience it, but most of them do not know that they have it. And that's going to be my next book. Estrogen dominance will manifest in symptoms like having terrible PMSs and PMDD, lumps on our boobs, thyroid nodules, fibrocystic breasts, fibroids, endometriosis, a lot of breast cancers. So, like, you're talking about 80% of breast cancers in the United States are what we call estrogen receptor positive breast cancers, right? Which is caused by estrogen dominance. So, I'm passionate about this because we have so many women losing their breast and uterus, especially uterus, for example, due to fibroids, which is completely preventable if action is taken early. Or even as preventative, right? So, and I think the last one I'll just mention is PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is the leading cause of infertility and lack of periods in women in developed countries. And PCOS stands for polycystic ovarian syndrome. Some women will have cysts on the ovaries. You don't have to have it, but 80% of women with PCOS have high blood sugar levels. Which is not surprising given how much sugar there is in everything in the United States, and most of us have some kind of a sugar issue. And
Right.
you have a sugar issue when, after, for example, having a meal, we start feeling tired, we feel like we need more sugar, we need more food after food, even after having a full meal, we feel still hungry. Women who have low, example, eat we start getting really cranky, moody, unfocused, shaky. That's a sign. Those are blood sugar, low blood sugar levels, right? So we definitely want to fix that for having balanced hormones. So as you can see, that's why it's hard for me to answer like what are the few symptoms only, because they really vary on the conditions. So I hope this was helpful for me to explain the different imbalances and how they manifest.
Oh yeah, definitely. So I know in your practice and in your books, you talk about more, you know, food and natural alternatives to the conventional treatment. But what is the conventional treatment that doctors and endocrinologists are prescribing for these hormonal imbalances?
Yeah. So if you have a low thyroid function, you see an endocrinologist, it's actually not medication, it's basically thyroid replacement, a hormone replacement therapy, right? It will come in the form of Synthroid or, you know, sometimes bioidentical hormones. Endocrinologists don't like to test for, like when you have thyroid, for example, they don't like to test for Hashimoto's antibodies, which is the leading cause of thyroid problems, because they can't give you a pill to lower down the antibodies or take care of Hashimoto's, right, which is an autoimmune disease. And so instead they just give you the replacement drug without asking the question what's causing the autoimmunity in the first place. So that's for thyroid. For, like, you know, if you have PCOS, typically docs will put a woman on birth control pills, which drives me absolutely...
Doesn't that make it worse?
Well, you know, actually so women with PCOS, because of irregularity of their periods, they want to get their periods back. So it creates an illusion like you're getting your period back.
Yeah, but it's a Band-Aid approach.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, all the things I'm talking about, those are Band-Aids, because you asked what they do, right? So absolutely. So those are Band-Aids. You know, if you are in menopause, it depends on, like, if it's osteoporosis, they'll give you, you know, medications for that, which again are super invasive, right? And for some women who are going to, like, perimenopause, menopause, they'll give you synthetic estrogens and progestins, which is synthetic progesterone. As you said, none of these approaches are sustainable. They're not going to ensure good health. And so there are a lot of really great natural alternatives, and that's why I created my cookbook.
Right. So let's talk about that. So your cookbook, Cooking for Hormone Balance, is mostly about the foods that we should be eating and including in our diets and the ones that maybe we should be avoiding if we do have hormone balance, correct?
That is correct, yes.
So let's go into those healing foods. Like, do a couple of the specific ones and why they're good in particular for hormone balance.
Sure. Would you want me to talk about seed rotation, or have you covered that on your podcast before?
I would love for you to talk about that.
Okay. So seed rotation is a good example of bringing in these four seeds to your life to see some profound changes. And I'll explain how it works. And I will say, I will share with your listeners that when I first heard about this method about 8 years ago, from this naturopath, I was working with a woman who had 20 days of periods and bleeding in a month, heavy, and she was highly anemic, she was exhausted, and needless to say, super frustrated. And I remember testing her hormones, and in the lab, there was a doctor who was providing advisory services, and she said, try seed rotation. And I thought, what? Is going to help this woman who's like this poor woman who's bleeding so heavily? And she said, just try it for a month or two and see what happens. And long and behold, this person's periods got completely normal within a couple of months. And I've been using seed rotation with women ever since then, and with profound changes. I would say probably 7 women out of 10 have some major shifts in their hormonal imbalances coming back. And then about, you know, 3 out of 10 will be like, well, this is not really working. And most likely it's because there's so much of other issues and inflammation going on that seeds alone just won't fix it, right? Mm-hmm. So seed rotation, the whole idea behind seed rotation is that you can use specific seeds to boost estrogen levels in the first part of the cycle and then boost progesterone in the second part of the cycle. So let's go into specifics. Let's say if a woman is cycling, if you've got a period for 28 days, day one of the cycle is the first day of your period, right? So from day 1 to day 14, so imagine like this is like a circle and you're just cutting the circle across, right, through with a horizontal line. So in the upper part of the circle, that's where you have your estrogen boosting seeds. And because this is the time when estrogen is going to, both estrogen and progesterone, well, especially estrogen, is going to be peaking, and we want to be helping the body to create our own estrogen. So the seeds that will promote estrogen production, and they contain a slight phytoestrogen, so naturally occurring plant phenols in the seeds, are flax seeds and pumpkin seeds. And all you have to do is grind up 1 tablespoon each, and then have it either in a glass of water or put in your smoothie, you know, on top of a salad, on top of a soup, doesn't really matter. You don't want to cook them. You want to have them in the raw form. So the lignans, which is, that's where the goodies are, remain untouched and raw, right? And then around your ovulation, switch over to progesterone boosting seeds. And there you have sesame seeds and sunflower seeds, same method, 1 tablespoon freshly ground each. A couple of practical, so just these seeds, just to give you an idea, a little bit of the science behind it, sesame seeds and sunflower seeds contain zinc and vitamin E, which are hugely beneficial for our body to produce progesterone naturally itself. So you're not giving yourself any, there's no progesterone in any foods, unlike estrogen, but we can give the raw materials to our body to start producing our own progesterone, okay? Mm-hmm. Couple of practical tips here. Please do not go to a store and buy like the flax meal, because that stuff is already pre-ground. It's already oxidized and it's pretty useless, especially it's been on the shelf for like a year or so. Don't want that. So what we can do is grind the seeds yourself. I spend as little time in the kitchen as I can, I'll be honest, but even though I write recipes and cookbooks, I'm a super practical person, right? So pre-grind those seeds. Like, for example, if you are in your follicular phase, the first part of your cycle, then just grind up those seeds and for like four to five days worth of seeds, put them in a jar, airtight container, put them in a fridge so they don't get oxidized, right? That's the main thing, is you don't want them to get oxidized. And then use them as you go throughout the day. Really simple method. If this is very confusing, it is on my website. If you go to hormones with an S, hormonesbalance.com, and just search for seed rotation, there is a whole article just describes how this works, and you can download all the details.
Awesome. Yeah, I also have a PDF that I can include in the show notes for people that tells you exactly what to do. Make sure you're buying raw seeds, when to switch. But I would love for you to talk about, so I know there are quite a lot of people that listen to my podcast that in the past have been in the trap of the overexercising and undereating and had lost their period because they were an athlete or for hormonal imbalance reasons. So how do you like to use seed rotation for those people to help get their cycle back?
Yeah, so, you know, did you say somebody's over-exercising?
This is in the past. So they're on the road to recovery and getting their hormones balanced and working on the mindset piece and anti-inflammatory foods and less food restriction, but they're still struggling with the getting normal cycles back piece.
Yeah, so, you know, so it's interesting. It will be good to see. First of all, trying seed rotation, I think, is the easiest thing to do right away and see whether that works. If it doesn't, then, you know, then it's worthwhile looking at what other hormonal imbalances potentially are going on. And like I said, sometimes seed rotation alone is just not good enough. Mm-hmm. For example, somebody who's been over-exercising oftentimes is the adrenals that are burned out. And when we have adrenal issues, then there is this phenomenon called pregnenolone steal. Mm-hmm. And what it means is when you are constantly stressed out and whether it's the stress from physical exercise or emotional or chemical stress, what happens is the pregnenolone is the raw material for progesterone and cortisol. Both of these hormones are produced from pregnenolone. And what happens is when you're constantly stressed out, or the body is in a state of stress, what happens is then we are producing a lot of cortisol to get us through the day. And then progesterone production gets compromised because we are just not producing enough pregnenolone to enable progesterone production. And so, you know, so it's worthwhile looking into what is the cause. On my website, I have a quiz, you know, hormonesbalance.com/quiz, where you can take the quiz and figure out what other hormonal balances are going on. Oftentimes when we don't get our cycles back, it could also be low thyroid function that could be at play. It could be estrogen dominance. It could be adrenal issues. So it's worthwhile investigating what else is stopping us from getting a cycle.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about food now. So what kinds of foods do you like to recommend for people who are trying to get their hormones back in balance? And why particularly those foods?
Yeah, so, you know, so I like to work with a two-strong approach, right? One is adding highly nutritious foods. On the other hand, also removing foods that are highly inflammatory. And one of the things that I suspect your listeners would connect with is the whole, you know, the sentence that somebody would say, I'm already such a healthy person. I'm eating so well, right? I mean, I think that's one of the biggest, the most common emails that we receive.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm already a very healthy person, right? Like, I'm eating already really well. And so, you know, when I was in private practice, I would then sit down and dissect the person's diet and realize that definition of healthy is very subjective. Is a lot of times is, you know, as healthy as what we were told by food makers of what is healthy. For example, that protein powders and shakes in your smoothies is a healthy option, which I completely disagree with that. Or having, you know, a smoothie with bananas and pineapple and mangoes and, you know, a lot of sugar first thing in the morning is a healthy thing. Or that yogurt and fruit first thing in the morning is a healthy thing.
Sugar on sugar on sugar.
Well, that as well, you know, temporarily you need to remove dairy for, you know, for a month or so and do the full elimination diet. So, you know, what I cover a lot in my cookbook is starting off with the elimination diet where you remove the big seven foods, and they would be dairy, eggs, soy, corn, peanuts, and nightshade vegetables. Nightshades are like potatoes, tomatoes, eggplants, peppers. Just temporarily, this is just a temporary approach, just to figure out, you know, clean up the diet, be on an anti-inflammatory diet, and then slowly bring those foods in and see how your body responds, because your body's never going to lie. So that's the big first step that I really want everybody to take, is to go on anti-inflammatory diet with those low, without these foods, and also minimizing sugar, right? So that's another data. That's another thing I've realized, is when how much sugar there is in the juice you're drinking, how much sugar there is in, you know, some kombuchas have as much as 12 grams of sugar. That's 3 teaspoons of sugar in, you know, just one kombucha. But when you add this up together with a juice later on and a power bar, you know, like, I love a lot of really healthy bars. Like, Lara Bar is one of my go-to bars when I travel, right? But, you know, Lara Bar has the 25 grams of sugar. Divide that by 4, and you've got, what, 5.5-6 teaspoons of sugar just in a Lara Bar. And it's, you know, it's fair enough. I mean, it's better sugar, like these dates and figs and whatever they are using, but it's still sugar, and that messes us up big time when it comes to hormones. So just to be mindful of the amount of sugar you're consuming, and start, just do it once, count, see how much sugar is in everything you're eating, and then after that, you know what to do. On the other hand, like you said, you know, bringing in these highly nourishing foods. And so I have a few that I would love our listeners to try. The first ones are all the cruciferous vegetables. Cruciferous vegetables is the brassica family of cabbage veggies, right? So obviously all the cabbages, but also broccoli, cauliflower, arugula, which is my personal favorite.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. I love that peppery, right? That's kind of a slightly bitter taste to it. You know, bok choy, right? All the crucifers. And they are amazing for a couple of reasons. One is they contain a substance called DIM, dialdermethane. And DIM, a lot of times, you know, women take that in a supplemental form, but I think there's nothing better just to get it from food, especially if you can eat cruciferous vegetables. DIM is an amazing estrogen detoxifier. You know, the estrogen dominant symptoms I talked about, I mean, almost every woman at some point in her life has got lumpy boobs, fibrocystic breasts, right? You know, many women struggle with fibroids, endometriosis, thyroid nodules. All of that can be reversed and prevented when we clear estrogen properly. And these cruciferous veggies can be super helpful. Another one, which I absolutely love, and I encourage everyone to put that in their smoothies if you are a smoothie type of a girl, is a broccoli sprouts. Broccoli sprouts contain naturally occurring sulforaphane, which is a substance that, guess what, is a natural estrogen blocker. So anybody who's struggling with the symptoms I talked about that are estrogenic, even, you know, there are even clinical trials now that are being done on women with breast cancers, estrogen receptor positive breast cancers, when they are using sulforaphane as a natural estrogen blocker, which is phenomenal, right? I mean, it's like, who would have thought it's, I mean, it's a serious contender to tamoxifen, which is a highly toxic drug that's given to women with estrogen receptor positive breast cancers, but it can only be given for 5 years because the liver, it destroys the liver. Mm-hmm. Right, that's why it's only 5 years. And here you have these little broccoli sprouts that can be so powerful. As a preventative measure, you want to use about a quarter of a cup a day. And if for women who are already struggling with malignant tumors or any form of growth, you have, say, lumps on your boobs, you want to do something like a cup a day of these little broccoli sprouts. Another one that I love is cacao. So bring on the chocolate. without the sugar. And the reason why we love cacao is because it is very high in magnesium. You know, part of the reason why women crave chocolate, right, is, I mean, that's like a, you know, it's a cultural thing. I mean, we all know, like, women and chocolate is just synonymous, right, with cravings. And the reason why we crave that is not because of the sugar, actually. We crave it because the body is conditioned to know that every time you have a piece of chocolate, it gets a magnesium hit. And that's the reason why you crave chocolate. And so bringing on cacao, you know, my recipes, the recipes I have there are all very low in sugar. So learning how to add the cacao in, you know, it's bitter, right? Naturally, good quality cacao is bitter. Like, it should not be sweet because there is no sweetness in a cacao bean, mm-hmm. especially that's been roasted. It's like having coffee, you know, like, it's not sweet, right? But just using them, you know, in smoothies that are using either very low natural amounts of sugar or using a bit of stevia or monk fruit as sweeteners that are non-caloric and clean sweeteners is a really great option of bringing this in. So those are just, you know, those are just some of them. I'm also a big fan of things I just quickly mentioned, bone broths, livers, you know, especially chicken livers. Just to give you an example, for instance, chicken livers have got 67 B12 as compared to chicken breast.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, so, like, one of the recipes I have in a cookbook is called the Easy French Pâté that has converted chicken haters to chicken lovers, to liver lovers. And, you know, that's what you eat in France. People go like, oh, my God, I went to France. I had this amazing pâté. Without realizing that's actually the liver that's the main ingredient in a pâté.
Okay, so are there, I know you mentioned the broccoli sprouts, but aside from that, are there different foods that are more beneficial for certain kinds of hormonal imbalances? So, like, high or low cortisol, or if you're a little bit hypothyroid versus estrogen dominant?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the seed rotation, the cruciferous vegetables and broccoli sprouts are just like a wonderful, and cacao as well, because magnesium helps to detoxify the liver hugely, and it helps with clearing estrogen. So those are the amazing foods for estrogen clearance. Mm-hmm. If you're dealing with a thyroid, you know, most thyroid issues are because of Hashimoto's disease, which is an autoimmune disease. And with autoimmunity, the first bodily system you want to go after and heal and give it some TLC is your gut, mm-hmm. right? So cutting out those foods, those inflammatory foods I talked about, is paramount. I mean, you can bring in, because here's the deal, right? You can, you know, bring in all the amazing, like, the fermented foods like sauerkraut and, you know, and make your own dill pickles and make your own bone broth and all that stuff. But if you're still eating highly inflammatory foods, it's like pouring, you know, it's like adding fuel to the fire, right? Mm. So you've got to do two things at the same time. It's a two-prong approach. Gut healing is all about removing those triggering foods and then bringing in, like I said, bone broth, You know, the other thing that I have in the cookbook also is using slippery elm. There's a slippery elm tea that's a wonderful, soothing way of helping us rebuild the digestive mucosa in the small intestine. And, you know, so many women feel right, especially when you feel like your digestion is on fire and your intestines hurt with eating. Slippery elm just creates like this film to protect and let the mucosa heal. It's an incredible food, and there is a recipe for a tea, slippery elm tea. Let's see, for adrenals, you know, adrenals love a couple of things. Foods that are high in magnesium, so cashews and cacao are huge. And then adrenals also are total suckers for vitamin C. Mm-hmm. We have the highest concentration of vitamin C receptors in a body in the adrenals. And so, you know, the thing that I love to work with is camu camu, C-A-M-U-C-A-M-U. It's a berry. It's a Peruvian berry that you can eat. You can add that to your smoothies. And generally to smoothies, just have it with a glass of water. And that's gives you a big kick of vitamin C in a natural form really quickly. It's very uplifting. The other thing is, I just mentioned this because I just, I actually just learned this recipe while I was in Sicily. I spent a month in Sicily roaming around and just exploring and learning.
Living the dream life.
yes, but still working somewhat. And that's all research for my new book. It was interesting because I got severely dehydrated. I went on a walk up this volcano, and I didn't realize the Italian guides, the guidebook tells you it's 2 hours. It's actually 2 hours. You know, in the United States, it would mean up and down, right? Mm-hmm. Over there, the 2 hours was just to the peak for a very, very fit person. And I'm fairly fit, and it took me 2.5 hours. And then coming down, so, you know, it was in scorching heat. I brought very little water with me. I got severely dehydrated and had a splitting headache. And I was meeting a friend for a drink that night, and I said, there's no way I can drink any wine because I'm already so dehydrated. I'm exhausted. My head is spinning. And the bartender overheard it, and she said, oh, you know, this cute Italian accent. She says, you know, I've got this special Sicilian drink for you. And so what it was sparkling water. It was like a Pellegrino. And then she put there probably a half a teaspoon of sea salt, mm-hmm. and then added some lemon juice, and she stirred it, and that was my drink. And I tell you, I've been drinking it ever since. In fact, I just came back from a health conference with all my health, you know, geeky friends, and I had some sea salt from Sicily. So I went to the conference, right? So I was making that drink for all my colleagues. And everybody felt so rejuvenated and so picked up, you know, that it was just like, you know, especially like around 3 o'clock, instead of doing a caffeinated drink, I'll say to them, let me make you this Sicilian, they call it spritz in Italy. Let me make you that. And, you know, and 10 minutes later, all my friends were like, oh my gosh, I just feel so energized. What it is, what's the secret behind this is the salt, right? That is also fantastic for the adrenals. And what salt does is gently brings up our blood sugar levels. And the adrenals, which are also responsible for producing a hormone that is regulating our blood pressure. Now the adrenals are relieved from having to produce that hormone. And they can then basically focus on creating cortisol and you know, and so it's adrenals love salt, basically. And that's the reason why a lot of times when women have adrenal issues, they also craving salt. So do give in to that craving. Just make sure it's top quality salt.
Not just table salt.
Exactly. You don't want to do table salt. You don't want to do all the kosher salt. You don't want to do, you know, iodized salt, because these salts have been stripped of everything. And all there is just sodium in it left. That's the worst thing. You want to have it to be all minerally rich, and there's a reason why these minerals all play a big role.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It's like an adrenal cocktail or mocktail, totally. I guess.
Totally.
So I know how we talked about in the beginning of the podcast that, you know, food is great, but food can only go so far when you're trying to heal. So what about some other kind of lifestyle practices that we should include, or maybe ones that we should avoid if we're trying to heal from any kind of hormonal imbalance?
You know, Dana, I think the biggest thing that I see amongst women is to give ourselves permission to do two things. One is allow ourselves to sleep more. And number two is give ourselves permission to rest.
Yes, I love that.
You know, having especially now come back from Europe where I spent 2.5 months, it's pretty clear to me that people there are not afraid to take a rest. You know, the siestas, which are sometimes would drive me crazy, especially when you're not used to being in Europe, you know, they shut everything down from 2 o'clock to five. Nothing is open, right? If you, you know, if you want to run errands during that time, it's a huge inconvenience until, you know, unless you figure it out and you have to structure your life around it, right? But, you know, people go and rest. And that's why, that's probably one of the reasons why the south of Europe does not suffer from adrenal exhaustion the way we do. So there is a reason for that. And, you know, and sleep, I mean, I just cannot emphasize how important that is. A good quality sleep is, well, number one, is highly disturbed by a lot of hormonal imbalances. Food sensitivities is another one. Over-caffeination. We caffeinate so much. I mean, we drink so much caffeine in the United States. If you just back off on your caffeine a little bit, you probably will experience a lot better sleep, or bring in a bit of magnesium. That can be a big, shift, can create a big shift in the quality of our sleep. And the whole idea is to sleep until you wake up naturally. So time it, like, for example, if you need to get up at 7 a.m., right, and you naturally need 8 hours of sleep, then do the math. You're going to be in bed by probably 10:30 just to calm down. Do not use any electronics half an hour before going to bed, right, so that, you know, the blue light from electronics is going to be interfering with the pineal gland producing melatonin. So I just want to put all of that away, do a bit of breathing meditation, go to sleep and wake up naturally without an alarm clock. If you need to nap in the afternoons, you know, especially on weekends, do it. It's not a sign of being lazy or unproductive. It's just a sign your body needs it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and resting, just, you know, there are people who believe that we have not just the circadian rhythm, but we have a daily rhythm as well. And around 3 o'clock is the time when many of us are feeling a bit slumpy. And we feel like, you know, it's so unproductive. I need to get all these 20 other things done, right? So what do? We go and drink a cup of coffee, right? But that's not a natural source of energy. You want to be able to produce your energy in your mitochondria naturally. Coffee is not the source of that. So, you know, if you need to have a rest, even for just 15, 20 minutes, closing your eyes and going for like a power nap is incredibly rejuvenating, and the adrenals are absolutely going to love it.
Right. And then the problem with drinking so much caffeine during the day, maybe it's because of a hormonal imbalance, or you just think you're very tired, or you didn't have restorative sleep, maybe because of blood sugar or hormonal imbalance. Then at night, you're so stressed out and you think you're not going to be able to go to sleep, so you have a glass of wine, and then it's a vicious cycle of messing up your sleep again so that you need more caffeine.
Absolutely. That's totally true. And wine, you know, especially red wine. I cannot remember the name of the substance right now, but there is, for those of you who wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning after, let's say if you have a glass of wine at 9 p.m. and you wake up between 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, that's oftentimes is the substance that actually, that's found in the red wine that wakes you up, that's stimulating. So that's something to also start observing. And you're absolutely right. And also the other thing with alcohol, right, is that it doesn't put you in a state of deep sleep. You go into the REM sleep, but not into the state of deep sleep. This is really where a lot of the rejuvenation happens. And so you're basically robbing yourself of quality sleep.
Exactly. Well, this has been amazing. Thank you for all of the information. I'm sure people are going to have a ton of questions that I will get for you later. But two things before I let you go. One is a question that I've been really liking asking all of my guests lately is, what is the most impactful book that you have read recently?
I'm reading my friend, I say a friend because he's an industry friend, but, you know, I don't want to make it sound like just because he's my friend I'm talking about it, but that's a book I just read when I was in Italy, OGO, The Longevity Diet. It's about fasting mimicking diet. It brings the whole premise of fasting It's something that we have done for centuries in every religion, in every culture. There's an element of fasting as a way of not just detoxification, but also we are now finding that our own stem cells that rejuvenate your pancreas, you know, blah, blah, blah. I can just talk about it forever. Is basically happens in a time of fast. So that's what the book is about. Absolutely fascinating, because I've always been fascinated with fast.
That's awesome. And then before I let you go, tell people where they can find you and where they can find your book.
Yeah, so my website is Hormones with an S, hormonesbalance.com. And the quiz is there that I mentioned, as well as if you want to have a full article on the seed rotation, or just get it. And the book is called Cooking for Hormone Balance, and it can be purchased in any Barnes & Noble. So if you want to have it online, then Amazon, of course, sells it.
All right, great. Well, guys, if you enjoyed this interview, definitely go check out the website and check out Cooking for Hormone Balance, because there are some really freaking tasty recipes in there. So I highly recommend it. Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends, and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes. And come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.